The scripture reading for today comes from the book of Genesis, chapter 34. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to visit the women of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her and lay with her and humbled her. And his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the maiden and spoke tenderly to her. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this maiden for my wife." Now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with his cattle in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he had wrought folly in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. I pray you, give her to him in marriage. Make marriages with us. Give us your daughters to us, and take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us, and the land shall be open to you. Dwell and trade in it, and get property in it." Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask of me ever so much as marriage. Ask of me ever so much as marriage presents and gift, and I will give according as you say to me. Only give me the maiden to be my wife." The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully, because he had defiled their sister Dinah. They said to them, "We cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition we consent to you, that you become as we are, and every male of you be circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us and not be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we will be gone." Their words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son Shechem, and the young man did not delay to do the thing because he had delight in Jacob's daughter. Now he was the most honored of all his family. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of their city and spoke to the men of their city, saying, "These men are friendly with us. Let them dwell in the land and trade in it, for behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters in marriage, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men agree to dwell with us, to become one people, that every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their cattle, their property, and all their beasts be ours? Only let us agree with them, and they will dwell with us." And all who went out of the gate of his city hearkened to Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. And on the third day, when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and came upon the city unawares and killed all the males. They slew Hamor and his son Shechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. And the sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city, because their sister had been defiled. They took their flocks and their herds, their asses, and whatever was in the city and in the field, all their wealth, all their little ones, and their wives, all that was in the houses they captured and made their prey. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me odious to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." But they said, "Should we allow him to treat our sister as a whore?" The word of the Lord.
So as I read and listen to the stories of all these women in the Bible that we're focusing on in the lectionary this year, the overwhelming feeling that I get is that we should change the name of the lectionary to "Nevertheless, She Persisted." The story that we heard today about the rape of Dinah is rarely read or taught in churches or synagogues. It's a difficult story with clearly morally challenged individuals all around. Dinah is raped by a prince, after which his father suggests buying her from the family as a way to essentially make it go away. Her father and brothers are more concerned about family honor than they are about Dinah. Her father is more concerned about the impact of the brother's retribution on his future for trade in the area than he seems to be for his daughter. No one asks her what she wants. No one asks her what happened. No one asks her about her experience. No one at all. In all the commentary and midrash that I read, there's a few basic themes, none of which really give Dinah a voice or acknowledge the rape. The first theme that I came across is that this is a story about the nation of Israel and the debate about intermarriage or keeping the bloodlines pure. So it's not really a story about Dinah at all. One of the lines from the Bible that I have is, "The men were indignant and very angry because he, Shechem, had committed an outrage in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing ought not to be done." The outrage here is not for Dinah. It's that an outsider should not be having relationships with one of their people. In this theme, the rape of Dinah is a narrative tool that allows for a bigger and apparently more important story to be told. Jacob wants to keep peace with the Hivites, whose lands they have entered, so agrees to the marriage. His sons want to keep the bloodlines pure and take over the country where they have landed. So they trick and weaken the Hivites, murdering the men and raping the women and stealing their herds and resources, thus making the land their own. Jacob's anger in this story is at his sons, as they have made him a potential target for the Canaanites and Perizzites, should they band together against him because of what they have done, since they are the strangers in this land. The sons are most angry that this episode could end in a mixed blood child or further intermingling of the peoples. Mentioning treating their sister as a whore at the end is more of an indication that they have been insulted rather than that she has been in any way wounded. Calling someone a whore implies that she consented. Whether that is actually the case or not, ever. The second theme of all the commentary that I read is debate whether or not Dinah was actually raped. Many have said over the years that because she does not fight either Shechem or the marriage, that she must have consented, or that she went out by herself, so she must have been a bad woman who drew attention to herself. For the love, what was she wearing anyway? Sound familiar? Or many of them not even focusing on Dinah, but focusing on Shechem and saying that because Shechem cleaves to her and loves her, he could not have raped her because rapists do not love their victims. Seriously, this is like 3 years ago that somebody wrote that. But the argument has been made for thousands of years. This is rape culture at its finest. Today, over 300,000 rapes and sexual assaults are reported in the U.S. every year, and only about one-third are actually reported. The numbers are likely closer to 900,000, which is a 20% decrease since 1995. Every 90 seconds, someone is sexually assaulted in this country. Every minute and a half. 98% are women and girls, 69% of them between the ages of 12 and 30. 84% of rapists are known to the women or children that they victimize. So much for he couldn't have raped her because he said he loved her. A third theme related to the last one is to say, like Anita Diamant's The Red Tent, that this is actually a love story, the original, like Romeo and Juliet, where both Dinah and Shechem are wronged by the sons of Jacob. This is evidenced, they say, by Jacob's agreement when Hamor suggests that he give his daughter in marriage, and the Hivites' agreement to be circumcised. It is a mutually agreed upon arrangement for the lovers and for the tribes to share daughters and lands and trade. All of these readings and commentaries obfuscate rape and leave Dinah alone and silenced. This is likely not a surprise to most of us here today. Rape culture is alive and well. It has existed at least since the Iron Age, if this account is taken as representative of the attitudes towards women and rape at the time. The Bible tells many stories of women raped and then claimed by their rapists. Some, like Tamar and Bathsheba, you may have heard of before. And there's story upon story upon story of revenge, including mass rape, murder, and pillage. Rape has been used the world over as a tool of war for conquest and control and to establish ownership. Women, girls, and boys have been raped and sold into sexual slavery from the earliest written historical accounts, myths, and legends. People are still being sold into sexual slavery at alarming rates across the world. It is the second highest grossing worldwide trade, next to the sale and distribution of illegal drugs. Perhaps if we use stories like the rape of Dinah to talk about the realities of sexual assault from the pulpit, there would be less people willing to blame the victim and more people saying, no, I will not allow this in my village. No, I will not be silenced. So who is Dinah? She is the seventh child of Leah and Jacob, the 12th child of the household. Her aunt is Rachel, sister to Leah, and mother to two of her brothers. Rebecca is both her great aunt, the sister of her grandfather Laban, and also her grandmother as the mother of Jacob. No, that's not right. Sarah is also her great-grandmother, the mother of Isaac, and the wife of Abraham. These are the matriarchs, though imperfect and human, who show great strength and fortitude in a world designed to manipulate, control, and silence them. Her grandmother, Rebecca, was known for her great kindness to strangers. She traveled alone to draw water from the well and offered a drink to Abraham's servant and all his camels. She was given a choice, indicative surely of some respect and power, and left her home to travel far away to marry Isaac. Likewise, her aunt Rachel travels alone with her sheep to the well where men are gathered to water their herds. Her mother Leah is also powerful in prayer and channels all of her feelings of sadness, despair, and loneliness into her relationship with God. The only thing we know from Dinah herself in the account is that she went out to visit the women of the region. That is the only line where she has really any agency in the whole reading, and it's a long one. They are entering a new land, and she is reaching out to the women of the region. Like her grandmother Rebecca, greeting strangers with kindness. Like her aunt Rachel, going out alone to do what is right and good. I like to think that she has inherited the fortitude and strength and kindness and wisdom of those matriarchs. If Dinah told her story, it would likely have included her fear and pain and sadness. She would have the strength of her mother to pour into this into her prayer and relationship with God. It might actually go something like this. Dinah went out to the women of the area to ask about their customs. She spent time in the tents of the women and inquired about the food that they made and what dyes and materials they used for their clothing. She was interested in their livestock and how they kept them safe and bred them for the interesting coats she had seen as she came into the village. After a full day of getting to know them, she was offered food and a sweet drink that the women made for each other as friends. As she was preparing to leave to go back to the tents of her family, the women advised her of the best route and warned her away from any areas where the young prince might be walking. As she walked, she thought about all that she had learned and felt excited about the friendship she had started. Midway back to her family, a young man approached from over a hill to the west. He hailed her and asked her name, and though she suddenly felt wary, she was generally trusting and so stopped, said hello, and stated her name. The young man came very close, much closer than custom should have allowed, and said his name was Shechem. Clearly trying to impress, he announced that he was the prince. Having 11 brothers, Dinah was pretty used to boys and young men jockeying for position and trying to impress, so she smiled and told him that it was quite impressive that he was a prince. Shechem told her she was beautiful, to which Dinah replied, "Thank you," and that she actually needed to go back to her family as it was getting late. At that point, he grabbed her and threw her to the ground, tearing her robes and raping her. As he raped her, he jeered, claiming that now he would own her, as he was sure that her family would not want her back, given that she was dirty and spoiled. Dinah felt humiliated and raw, lying on the ground in shock and fear. Shechem called to his friends who had been waiting over the hill, and they carried her back to his tent so that she could not go to her family. Once she was in the tent, Dinah thought about her mother's stories of praying when she felt most alone and in despair. She prayed and asked God for strength, protection, and guidance. Back in the family camp, Dinah's mother and aunt worried about her as she had been gone for more than a day. They knew of her strength and fearlessness in venturing out to speak to strangers and admired her young courage, often thinking about times when they were younger and took their own risks. When they saw Hamor come to speak to Jacob, they feared the worst for Dinah. Zilpah and Bilhah, having been slaves, had their own experiences of assault, so also feared for the young Dinah. They were additionally worried about what would happen when their sons returned, as they knew that they were all protective of their only sister. When Jacob announced that Hamor was paying bride price for Dinah and that she would be married to his son Shechem, the women of the family had various feelings and reactions. Each of them in some way had been given into a marriage that they did not choose or even necessarily want. They knew that this was how the world worked, and yet they felt both gladness for the marriage to a prince as well as sadness for the loss of their beloved, young, vibrant, outgoing girl. Rachel, Bilhah, and Zilpah all loved Dinah as if she was their own child because she was so very kind and loving, as well as intelligent and strong. She helped whenever asked and was generally happy, even when times were hard. Suspecting something was up, the women asked to see Dinah so that she could be attended to in the ways of women before the marriage, so that the men could not refuse. It was in this way that they gained the opportunity to hear the full story of Dinah's rape and subsequent holding in the tent of Shechem. When she returned to the family tents, Dinah cried and told of her pain and humiliation. Each of the women listened and shared their own stories of pain and violation, as well as the overcoming of that pain. Leah related her experience of despair and loneliness growing up the elder and less favored daughter. Dinah revealed that she had prayed to God to show her a way to navigate this horrible truth so that others were not drawn into a retributive cycle of violence like those she had heard about in their history. She did not want the women whom she had befriended to be violated in the service of some kind of so-called justice, and did not want their husbands or brothers harmed either. She was most worried about her brothers from Leah's womb, who would feel that they had to defend the family honor. She also knew that they were strongly against intermarrying with people from other tribes. As they talked and shared their pain and triumphs, Dinah felt a stirring in her heart that she knew was an answer to her prayers. When the sons returned from the fields and heard about the rape of Dinah and the offer of marriage, they were outraged and aggrieved. As they spoke of protection and revenge, Dinah suggested that they could request that all the men get circumcised so that they would be in line with the laws for marriage. She stressed how much this would hurt, as they were grown men and not eight-day-old babies, and that this would be a form of revenge for her brothers. She told of all that she had learned from the women of the new land and how they could incorporate new ways of animal husbandry and weaving and cooking that would enrich them for generations if she were to marry into this new tribe. She also told them of the multiple women she had met who were beautiful and funny and very good cooks. Many were of marrying age that could possibly make good wives for her brothers. After the wedding to Shechem, Dinah told the Hivite women of her violent treatment by the prince and shared her pain and her strength, just as her mothers had shared with her. She listened as they also told stories of rape and pain, as well as tales of loss and hardship. Over time, Dinah was honored amongst the Hivite women for her kindness, caring, and wisdom. She was much sought after for advice and taught the women how to pray strongly and deeply when they were in despair or darkness, which brought them much strength for many, many years. Dinah had 6 daughters and 3 sons, whom she nurtured and loved and taught the ways of God. Silencing stifles. The places we have been silenced are the places of our greatest strength. For many of us, those places get buried and manipulated so that we see them as a burden or shame and fear their release. Speaking into those silences does open wounds in pain, sorrow, and grief. It can feel like it will never end, but it does. And that is where we may find our dignity, our strength, and our connection to this mass of suffering and strong community. I have been an advocate for women and children and people without a voice for as long as I can remember. I have been speaking truth to power, I think, since I was 8 years old and told the priest that it was dumb that they would not let me be an altar boy. I've used my privilege to make space for those who've been silenced in my work as a therapist, a professor, consultant, and as a community member. For many, many years, I used my anger at injustice and the people who cause pain to the vulnerable to fuel my ability to keep advocating and speaking truth. I've also had to learn about all the ways that acting out of my anger or rage has hurt me over the years, how it does not align with my values. What I've learned is when my actions are not moving me towards that which I most value, then I need to get softer, more connected, and bring in more support. I've had to go to those places where I had been most silenced and humiliated and abused, and witness to my own pain, shame, and despair. I've had to come into community and open into the soft spots under the rage so that I could be witnessed and held in friendship and in love and in community. I think the thing that silenced me the most today is despair. The belief that the bad guys are winning or that they always win. I know this comes from growing up with family violence and living in a society that glorifies and rewards it. About a month ago, I was lying on the kitchen floor, overwhelmed with the horrendous things that are happening in this country. It's ugly and terrifying and so, so sad. I could not imagine how the light could ever shine again. Then I heard a piano concerto by J.C. Bach. It was so incredibly beautiful and clean. And it struck me that this beautiful piece of music has endured. This beautiful thing has survived, and so many ugly, horrible things have happened since it was written in the early 1700s. Many people have been tortured and killed, and many will die in this age too because of what some are doing today. And beauty will survive. The kingdom, I'm reminded, is already here. I need to remind myself to keep stepping into it and refuse to use the tools of the oppressor, even if only in my own head. I remind myself a lot of my grandmothers, who both were married to violent alcoholics and who both raised many children and worked in factories to send them to school. I think about my great aunts, who are nuns and teachers. I think about my heroes, Jane Addams, bell hooks, Aung San Suu Kyi, and other women who were repeatedly silenced and kept coming back over and over and over again, stronger each time. I believe for me that part of being a Christian means continuously challenging myself to see others as Christ sees them and to open to the vulnerabilities of those with whom I share the least values in common, those who make me the maddest, those I blame the most for the death and destruction in the world. Turn the other cheek, for me, has to mean to pause, take a breath, then speak truth to my experience, rather than reacting out of fear or rage. I also need to remind myself, and be reminded by you, to see myself as Christ sees me. A beautiful, loving, flawed, strong, vulnerable human being, a child of grace and hope. What if we, during Lent, were to practice being witness to the ways we have been most silenced? What if we were to listen to each other's stories? Truly see the soft spot of sorrow or grief or pain, and recognize the dignity and beauty of each other in all of our vulnerabilities. Let others see us in that too. What if that pain breaks us open rather than hardening our hearts and minds? We who have been brutalized and silenced, we are the tribe of Dinah. We will no longer be silenced. Our voices will be raised, and we shall not be moved.